You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
People might think that my Munster hat is too Munster. Got to get into a position where we're rewarding form as opposed to credit in the bank.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
We've got Phil Egan here in studio. Phil, how are you getting on?
How are you doing, though?
Very well. Where do we want to start here? Like, I mean, we're going to get into Ireland in just a moment. We were talking a little bit about the managerial merry-go-round a little bit earlier on, so we might just leave that. We might actually start with Liverpool. Any concern that this season might begin to unravel just a tad over the next little while?
There certainly was concerns even before the West Ham game. You'd seen previous games, the Brighton one the weekend before, conceding 2 goals, 2-0 up, and could have conceded more. You think back to the Brentford game as well, the Atletico away game. So Liverpool conceding multiple goals in games is not something you associated with this Klopp team when it was in its pomp. I mean, I think the season they won the league, they didn't concede more than one goal in a game until February, and at that stage they had the league wrapped up effectively. So there is a concern there. I don't think it's actually the defence's issue. I know everyone, as soon as Liverpool start conceding goals, a lot of the spotlight seems to fall on Trent Alexander-Arnold because he leaves space at the back. But the way Liverpool play is they want to press you, and if teams can get through it, then they have a chance. You saw it the other day. West Ham were perfectly set up to do that. The Fornals goal is the prime example. I mean, I think Bowen might have been taken down if there was an opportunity there, but Trent Alexander-Arnold was one of those players. He was already on a yellow card, so he couldn't do it. But yeah, there would be concerns. Personally, at the start of the season, I thought Liverpool would be in a title race, but I certainly wasn't tipping them to win the league. I think City have shown already they're the best team in the league. Chelsea might be top, but I think Chelsea have done well to bounce back from the fixtures they had after the defeat to City, when they were absolutely outplayed at Stamford Bridge. City have already gone to Stamford Bridge, Anfield and Old Trafford. They've come away with 7 points. I think City will really put the foot down after this international break. So between mid-November and January, and that's when you'll see their class come through. In terms of Liverpool, the real concern is midfield. Didn't replace Gini Wijnaldum. And I think what Wijnaldum, you had a player that was so durable. He was always in the team. Now you've got Fabinho, Henderson, and obviously it would have been Wijnaldum. That was seen as your midfield three. Fabinho and Henderson aren't always fit. They are at the moment. So then it's those two plus one. And it's almost operating on a roster of who is fit. So last Sunday, Oxlade-Chamberlain was in because he had impressed against Atletico. Naby Keita's filling that role. He gets injured. Harvey Elliott at the start of the season, he gets injured. Curtis Jones has done that role as well, but none of them are as effective defensively as Wijnaldum. So there's gaps there. Obviously teams get more time in the ball and then they can play in behind that high line of Liverpool. So that was the concern. The two concerns at the start of the season for me were not replacing Wijnaldum and maybe having one more attacker. Now they brought on Origi and Minamino the other day. Origi took his goal really well, obviously scored a really good goal in the League Cup as well against Preston, but he's not as good as, say, if you had the famed front three of Firmino, Salah and Mane. Jota is a really good player to bring in. Origi's not of the same calibre, so I think it could come back to bite them. Obviously Salah goes off to the Africa Cup of Nations with Mane and Keita in January.
Because that was the only thing that I was like after the United game, that I was like, oh, Liverpool, their charge towards the title could be that will be the hiccup that will probably be presented to them. if they have a number of hiccups before then, it does change the picture of the season significantly, because you cede ground on Chelsea and Manchester City. It's curtains, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the thing for Chelsea is they're losing Mendy.
Yeah.
And that could be a big blow. And yeah, their backup keeper is the world's most expensive keeper, but he's not as good as Mendy. And Mendy, I think back to the Brentford game where they won 1-0, Mendy was exceptional that day. Good goalkeepers win you titles. So they'll be without him for a month. Also, the pressure on Kepa, knowing that he has to step in there, and he's obviously a decent keeper. His confidence was shot for a while, but he's not going to be the same as Mendy. And also that feeds into the Chelsea defence as well, knowing that there's not the same stability as there is when Edouard Mendy is there. But
are Chelsea that good? Are we sure Chelsea are that good that we're just going to pencil them in for a really long winning run? Like, look at the game at the weekend. You go up 1-0 pretty early on. I mean, it's not the greatest of all the Burnley teams we've seen. It's not the worst. They're kind of a middling Burnley team, and they were able to get back in the game. And it wasn't a shock they got back in the game. Now, I didn't see the whole 90 minutes of the game, hands up, but certainly on the balance of chances. I think Chelsea are grand.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if they were to emerge as like a team who went on a 10, 12, 14, 16 game winning run.
No, I'd agree with you, Ger. At the start of the season, I would have said City, and I thought Liverpool would push them closest. Chelsea, obviously, as I said, they've had a nice run of fixtures. They're quite hard to beat, but I think they'll drop too many points. And with Burnley, no matter how bad Burnley are playing, I always feel very uncomfortable watching them. If you haven't got the second goal against Burnley, they'd one shot on target, and then they got the goal, and actually could have won the game. Vidra had a chance at the end where he tried to lob Mendy, and yeah, they're that kind of dangerous team where you always want the second goal. But no, I would agree that Chelsea are obviously set up in a way that they're very hard to break down. They keep plenty of clean sheets. Lukaku will come back in, and he was meant to be the answer, and he started off well, but then you saw the old signs coming in. I mentioned the City game. Chelsea couldn't get out in that game, and when they tried to get out, the ball was bouncing off Lukaku. Like, he was chasing a second touch. And
Lukaku was back that day.
Yeah. Now, Lukaku, the strengths of Lukaku is when he's facing defenders and he's running at them, but they couldn't do it that day. So, yeah, I'm not drinking the Chelsea Kool-Aid at the moment in terms of them being the team that's going to win the league. I always say at the start of every season, when Pep Guardiola's in charge of City, they have the title. It's up to someone else to take it off them.
I think that if you throw enough crap at the wall, though, like, a lot of it will eventually stick. And Chelsea just have so many amazing players that they will find a starting 11 every single week. Like, you talk about Liverpool's injuries, absolutely valid excuse from Liverpool's perspective.
They had Ross Barkley starting.
Yeah.
Barkley's fair point. A lot of this Chelsea stuff, and like, Tuchel's quite conservative. They play quite conservative. They allow teams to be in the game. I don't buy that. So I think that, like, they have a load of expensively assembled talent, but not like.
I think Ross Barkley a better footballer than Ziyech or than Mount or than Pulisic? I would say no, and I'm surprised that we're in this position that Barkley actually starts ahead of all three. Obviously, there's fitness issues.
Pulisic injury prone.
He is. Like, he is, of course, but when it comes to the actual talent available, and he's back available now. He came off the bench in that game. I think it does transform their attacking options. And maybe, like, was Barkley given a start because you got to give him that opportunity? You got to see if he's good enough to be starting in this team when he's given a full 90 minutes to play in that case? Or where do you see him in the pecking order?
Even Loftus-Cheek has got back in now. I rate Loftus-Cheek, but he's been injured. He started their Champions League game last week. It was his first Champions League start in 6 years.
Mm.
So that tells you where he's at. The potential is there, but he's gone out and he's had loan moves. He's quite a big player in terms of his physique, and he picks up these injuries because he's quite robust. So he, like Barkley, I didn't think we'd see these kind of players back in the Chelsea squad, but going back to some of the results they've had earlier in the season, they've eked them out with goals from wingbacks. Now, you don't care where the goals come from, but eventually, like, those goals will stop.
Yeah,
the wingbacks are not going to keep winning you games. As good as Reece James, well, I certainly rate Reece James ahead of Ben Chilwell. I think Reece James is an exceptional player. But yeah, I just think there's only 11 games in, and a lot can happen. So I just think City, we saw this last season with them as well. Like, they won't really get going, I don't think, until the middle third of the season.
we were chatting about the managerial vacancies a little bit earlier on in the show. Gerrard's panicking, he's quaking in his boots at the prospect of Steven Gerrard might be Aston Villa manager. There is a prospect of Frank Lampard becoming Norwich manager, and there is a prospect of Brendan Rodgers becoming Manchester United manager, although somebody was in touch a little bit earlier on to say Aston Villa should snap up Brendan Rodgers right now. How do you see this thing playing out? We might just focus on Villa and Norwich here.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Gerrard would be willing to leave Rangers, where, you know, he's obviously won a title, he's in a very good position to win back-to-back titles, and this one would probably be, well, I know last season stopped the 10 in a row for Celtic, but, you know, this is a proper season, you've got fans in the ground, this would be a bit more special, I think, for, and the fact that it'd be back-to-back. Would he leave that? I think a lot of Liverpool fans might feel a lot more comfortable seeing what Gerrard can do in the Premier League before. I mean, a lot of people feel that he's going to just walk into Liverpool. I don't know when.
You're a guinea pig, Gerrard. That's what Aston Villa are.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it would be. A little experiment.
But I think Aston Villa have a really good squad. Obviously, they just haven't found that cohesive unit yet since Grealish has gone, and they've had to change their way of playing. And unfortunately for Dean Smith, you could see the last few games he was trying out different formations, which, you know, kind of told the story that he was trying to stumble upon something that would get them back to winning ways. It's amazing how quickly it happened, though, and it just shows how ruthless the Premier League is, where you think of the win at Old Trafford. Okay, they go to Spurs the following weekend and they weren't great, they lose 2-1, then they're coasting 2-0 up against Wolves, who weren't scoring goals at the time, and then they somehow lose that game and it's all gone downhill and he's gone. But in a way, I'm glad it didn't, like, the rot hadn't set in, where it wasn't toxic at Villa Park. There was no one throwing cabbages at Dean Smith, where, you know, he's obviously a Villa fan. He took them over mid-table in the Championship, gets them up, you know, is trying to establish them in the Premier League, and, you know, he's loved at Villa Park. It hadn't set in, where you look at what's happening now at Old Trafford. Solskjaer, a club legend, but is in danger now of things. They're starting to turn, but...
Sorry to change this to Manchester United, but do we think that will actually happen? You know, it feels that for the last 12 months, ever since it got beaten 6-1 by Spurs last year, and we thought that Solskjaer would lose his job, people were saying that week, you know, if Solskjaer goes now, he can protect his reputation and he will never not be a club legend. We're here over 12 months later and we're still saying the same thing. No matter what, I think that he can hold on to the job and he will still be a club legend. That the reason why he's here is because he is an untouchable club legend, and no matter when he decides to resign or get sacked, I don't think that it actually will be altered in any way.
Eventually it won't, but while things are fresh, if you think of the 6-1 to Spurs, there was no crowd there. So there were signs on Saturday that they weren't necessarily chanting for Solskjaer to leave, but certain things, like chanting the name of Donny van de Beek, they knew what they were doing at the Stretford End, where they're chanting for a guy.
Like he was the second coming of Zidane.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, look what he did. He kept possession.
Yeah.
And amazing.
I was saying...
he didn't keep possession. That was a problem.
No, and I was saying, like, he could go in two-footed on someone and he would have got a standing ovation leaving the pitch, because people just want to see something different. They're sick of McFred, and Solskjaer always goes back to them, where you've signed players like Van de Beek who are meant to fit into systems, but unfortunately United don't have a system. And Sancho was signed. He's a systems player as well. So they're signing all these players, but they don't have a coach that's able to bring them in. And when things go bad, he'll always revert back to Scott McTominay and Fred. And I think we all saw what Roy Keane thinks of Fred. And look, I mean, he's one of a few problems that Manchester United have. But I don't know where they go. I thought Conte would have been a great appointment for Manchester United, but we know why he wasn't brought in, because he'd ruffle feathers, he'd annoy the hell out of the Glazers, because he would demand, he's very demanding. Whereas Solskjaer, John Giles touched on it last night on the show, where he's a yes man, and it's very easy. Management love yes men, where they can just call the shots. And Solskjaer, look, he knows he's blessed to have that job, so he's not going to try and disrupt things. And the way it's playing out at the moment, it's, you know, they're obviously not going to win a league title. I don't think people thought they were going to win the league this season, but they certainly thought they'd have a better crack. That could still happen, but it's very unlikely.
I think the thing about his reputation is that fans are fans, and so therefore they will remember the fact that he got rid of all that dead wood in the squad and he set it up for the success of whoever comes next. And you would expect whoever comes next to be somebody with a proven track record of managing a super club, and therefore they should be able to have some level of success, a Champions League semi-final or a final, a proper title run with this squad of players and whoever else, whatever the next injection of cash is, because the squad is pretty good. Now, there's a few obvious issues with it, but with a good manager, with a style of play that looks at Sancho and looks at Rashford and looks at all of those attacking talent and says, we're going to play this way, you're going to work your nuts off, and it's going to result in success. Ronaldo will have a role, whatever that role is. Like, I don't know. I think it's all set up for success, and I think very quickly the Man United fans will be like, yeah, Solskjaer was a great transition. He got rid of the players from Van Gaal and Mourinho's era, and he wasn't Van Gaal and Mourinho, and he'll come back to the club and he'll do the lap of honour and they'll play the goal from 99 and away we go.
And it'll be even more true in a few years' time, because like we're at the place now, and of course it's down to West Ham's success, where Manchester United fans are like, God, should have just given Moyes a little bit more time. Like that, there is a huge degree of revisionism. Like Arsenal fans do it with Unai Emery all the time when he's having success with Villarreal and winning the Europa League. It's like, did Arsenal sack Unai Emery so soon? Whereas in that moment, it's like David Moyes couldn't possibly keep his job. And that's clear. Same with the Emery situation. In this moment, Solskjaer cannot possibly keep his job. Whereas in a few years' time, people will look back and say, Solskjaer did a great job. He steadied the ship. And maybe it'll lead to some period of success.
Yeah, but there's already people, I can't even believe I'm about to say it, but there's already people mentioning David Moyes could be just who Manchester United need. No,
Saying last night, wasn't he?
He showed it the first time that he doesn't have what it takes to manage Manchester United. Just certain things that he said, you have to. There's just a certain way you have to manage a club like Manchester United, and he used to just say the wrong thing regularly. Where that's not what you say as a Manchester United manager, and people say, "Oh, look, I mean, it's all for show." What, like, you have to be seen saying the right thing, but that's how you manage a super club. You embrace it. And you look at Jurgen Klopp, he talked about the history, but he didn't use it as something to keep looking back on. He used it as something to help bring the club forward, and he embraced it. Guardiola hasn't had to do the same at Manchester City because they're nowhere in the same league as Manchester United in terms of their history and their pedigree. But that's the worry. We're talking about who United appoint next. Would you trust this current ownership to get that appointment right? I couldn't say.
Absolutely not.
I couldn't say I would be confident that they've
got it.
You
could say they've already got it wrong by missing out on Antonio Conte.
I think Conte, and people say, oh, it was a short term. But short term, what's short term success? As in winning titles? I'm pretty sure United fans,
they signed a 36-year-old striker. They are very much in a short term state of mind.
Yeah, and like Jared touched on it there, the squad is good. It needs a serious injection of urgency in it, because there's a lot of energy and pace in that squad. But looking at them the other day, they set up like a championship team that was trying to just contain Manchester City. And if there was replays, let's see, can we keep it tight and we might get a replay and get another payday. That's the way it was. But it's Manchester United. They shouldn't be playing like that.
We don't have time to get into Ireland, unfortunately, Phil. But can you give us a number between 1 and 10 in terms of your optimism levels for Portugal?
About 7. And okay, just quickly before, I think in terms of the team selection, I know Shane Keegan was on with you, I would be surprised if 9 of the starting 11 from Faro don't play on Thursday night. So Dara O'Shea got injured, I think Amabamadeli, who came on from, I think he will start, and obviously there's now Aaron Connolly and I think Robinson. Callum Robinson. So I'm kind of sticking with that Hendrick, Cullen and McGrath midfield,
right,
and Doherty and Coleman.
There's a lot of optimism on the All Blacks front and on the Portugal front on OTB AM this morning. Phil, good stuff. Thanks a million.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20
and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.